Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Sober as sober. Sober. Sober as
welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program devoted to bringing hope to those struggling with mental health issues and addiction. Through candid conversations with guests about mental health issues, addiction, and sobriety, we can let those who are struggling know that they are not alone. I am your host, Ralph Sara. Welcome. With us today, I have Molly Chukbaak. Molly is from the Tono Odom Nation in southern Arizona. She is part of Native Strength Revolution, where she is a certified yoga instructor. Molly is 10 years sober, and on today's show, Molly courageously shares her story for those still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Molly Chukbaak. Hi, Molly. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Ralph. I'm wonderful this Saturday evening.
Yeah, yeah. Last night I had a gig. I played at a place called the Carousel Lounge, and it was a late night for me, but I'm happy to be here this morning, and it's really pretty out there, sunny and cold.
Interesting combo. I ran a half marathon this morning out on the Hill River Reservation, so I'm just recuperating now, still in my euphoric state.
Oh my gosh, how many miles is a half marathon?
Half marathon is 13.1.
Oh man, and you just ran that?
I just ran that, and whoa, a couple of weeks ago I was in New York and I ran a full marathon. It's 26.2 miles.
Oh my gosh, the New York City Marathon. Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
And how did you get into long distance running?
That's funny. I've always liked running, and then addiction like took that away, right? Took away that passion. I was an athlete, but during my incarceration the first time, running helped me get back. I had realized, okay, you have no bond. You're kicking dope. You're not going home. The reality, right? And I had to get myself up and just start walking the tier. And then we were like on lockdown for a good 30 days. And then finally we got out and I just started running. And all during my incarceration time, I ran any chance I could get. It was just like a way for me to stay out of trouble, pray, burn myself out, and know that I'm one more day closer to going home.
Wow.
And it just helped me in that way. It just helped me stay sane. And when I returned home, I never really like competed or did any running, like, you know, 5Ks, 10Ks, anything like that. And a good friend of mine introduced me into, like, I wouldn't say competition, but just more, I run more for prayer. My running is prayer. I'm running for somebody, not for myself, for a cause, raising money, or just, like I said, just prayer.
I read somewhere where you said, you were saying you run for other people. And I read something that you said. You said, I run for those who cannot, those suffering from substance or alcohol abuse, mental and physical abuse. I run for the ones before us, and I run for those who are still on their way to this universe. And man, that really like hit me, you know, such a like a healing statement.
Thank you. Yes, that's what it is. You know, it's in our bloodlines, and our people did it too for us, right? Not only to like save situations, save villages, but just to run in general, good health, celebrations. You know, it's really embedded in all of our bloodlines, and now I'm able to pay it forward or to be a part of that same way.
I read somewhere else, something else. I think it was like a meme or something. It said somewhat to the effect that the people that have been through such struggles are the people who are most are the healers, you know, that help heal other people because they've been through it, you know.
I agree with that statement. I agree with that totally.
Molly, can you go ahead and introduce yourself so everybody can get to know you?
Yes. My name is Molly Chukbaak, originally Norris. I come from the Norris family. I'm from the Tonawatam Nation. We are far south along the Mexico border and on the other side in Mexico also. That's my dad's side. My mom is Akmeatam, and those are the river people and desert people. I think the popular name is like Pima and Papago, okay, that others know, but I'm from southern Arizona, and I am a mother of 10. I have 10 children. And that's a big number. Yes, my husband and I together, my husband and I together have 10 kids and 3 grandbabies. So we have a big family.
That's amazing. Holy cow.
That's what a lot of people say, like, wait, what? But yes, truly blessed with children. 7 boys and 3 girls. We adopted one, and the rest are ours.
Wow, amazing. So you were referred to me by Janae Thompson.
Janae is so awesome. I had the honor to teach her yoga during her time in treatment. That's what I do now. Today I help Indigenous and others, but majority Indigenous people in early recovery here in Arizona. I started my own business and I provide my yoga services, but I also do business development, like liaison work, like I do everything. But just to help the people in their journey, you know, something that wasn't really given to me. And so I, you know, made the path. And so I help others. And I taught her 4 days out of the week, and we built a relationship. And yoga helped me in my early recovery. It helped me find myself. People, majority think it's about like movement or, you know, like these crazy poses and stuff. That's a part of it. But number one is finding oneself and building up the body that we've abused for so long in addiction. And it's been an amazing journey, and I'm just really honored we just got to share that time with her, share a little bit of myself, you know, just little pieces here and there, and just grew that bond with her.
You're part of like a group or something. What is that called?
Yes, that's Native Strength Revolution. Kate Jennings, she's from the Laguna tribe, and this was one of her dreams to have other Indigenous people from all over the world to get certified and go back and help their communities. And it's flourishing, it's blooming now. And I was granted a scholarship to get certified a couple of years ago during the pandemic. And it just opened so much doors, so many doors after I got that certification. Like I said, it helps you find yourself. Like, what is your purpose? A deeper appreciation of yourself, more confidence. And then as you teach, it just grows and grows and grows. I had no clue it was going to be like that. like I said, yoga found me in treatment 10 years ago, over 10 years ago. And I wanted to do it. You know, I really wanted to. I was passionate about it. It helped me heal physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. It just wasn't time. I needed to do other things. I needed to get a place. I needed to get a job. It just didn't line up. And I put it out there. I'm a firm believer of, you know, manifestation, and say it out loud and it'll come when it's time. And it came back. And I had the opportunity to, and I'm like, I'm grabbing it. I'm going to do it. And at this time I was going through a divorce, and I was working construction. I was working like crazy long hours, and come to find out my foreman practiced yoga. So he helped me make a schedule that would work for me to be able to take my class. And it lined up. It was time, right? The cosmic tumblers lined up. And it was time, and it happened, and this is where I am today.
Man, I totally believe in manifestation. I was a guest on a podcast not too long ago, and we were trying to think of what it was, and we were telling stories about how we experienced that. And I was telling him, you know, when I was in treatment, I made a vision board, right? And on that vision board, I had things like, you know, I had my family because I wanted to get my family back. And I had, you know, material things like I had a bass guitar on there. And then I had a, you know, a house. And then I had a book that said The Anonymous Eskimo, you know, New York Times bestseller kind of thing. And then I was like, I had that up, and then when I was commenced out of treatment and I got home, I put it up to where my treadmill is, and then I'd run every day and just look at that, and then, you know, just think to myself. And it's funny because maybe the universe won't give you exactly what you want or what you're trying to manifest, but it's in some form or some way it'll like happen if you put wheels to it, you know, because like, you know, this podcast, you know, it may not have been a book or whatever. And then there, the bass guitar there of like, I don't know, a year later, I was gifted that by my fiance. I was like, hey, wait, hold on a second. I went down to the vision board and I was like, that's the guitar, exactly the same. Did you see this? And she was like, no, I didn't see nothing. So it's amazing how, you know, that manifestation can work, you know. It's truly, truly, you know, something to think about. And I truly believe in it.
Yeah. Definitely, definitely. And that's what I encourage my students, like on the yoga mat. The yoga mat is your safe space. It's your safe space. It's a place where our space has been invaded, violated throughout our lives. And this is our space where we can time travel and we can manifest and channel energy, heal our body, and create dreams or awaken dreams. You know, it really helped them with that, or quieting the mind. But I'm like, I know you don't believe me, and you might think I'm crazy, but you can do this. You can do this. You have that power.
And
some of them take it, some of them don't, you know. Some come around and like, hey, you know, I did this and I said this a year ago, and today it happened. And I'm like, yes, you know, just really happy for them when they get that.
Yeah. Is there, when you're doing yoga, is there any type of like tradition or cultural practices that you tie into it? Or is it just like strictly mind healing and body yoga that you teach?
No, I twist it up. You know, I teach the first three vinyasas, and I tie in my culture, or I get familiar with who I have in front of me and honor their times, because we all have our different seasons, different times, ceremonies going on. You know, just bring that to light, acknowledge it. You know, even they're away from home, let's acknowledge that. Let's send good energy to your people who are preparing for ceremony. Or sometimes I'll sing a song from my culture, or it's just whatever you feel. So it's never just one thing. It's whatever I feel that day, whatever needs to be done. Maybe one person is needing more uplifting or going through something, so we help that person uplift and channel good energy to them.
You know, I was talking to somebody recently on a different interview, and the subject of like ceremony and cultural activities came up, and we were talking about how, you know, some of these cultural activities or ceremony are really strict on who they let participate in. You know, if somebody's, you know, still drinking or, you know, still using or something like that, you know, they won't allow that to happen. But we're saying, you know, sometimes the people that are really struggling and are, you know, just trying to make it are the ones that need ceremony and these cultural activities the most.
Yes, I agree. And I say this to my peers, my students, you know, a lot of us, everyone is gifted a gift and we have a purpose. And sometimes we run away from our gifts. Sometimes we don't want them. We know songs, we have different talents, different gifts, and we try to mask them with the drugs and the alcohol, and yet it just comes more because we're not supposed to be doing the drinking and the drugging, right? So I'm like, embrace your gift. You can't run from it. It's not a burden. It's a gift, and honor it and respect it, because our people need us. We are like our next elders. So we need to keep that going. Teach somebody that song, teach somebody that dance, teach somebody how to make whatever it is that needs to be made. We know it, we see it, but we also honor and respect it because we're drinking and drugging. And I totally agree with that part of not being able to be there when you really, really need it.
Yeah. I mean, that cultural aspect, some people are really like yearning for that, you know, because that's been taken away by these drugs and alcohol, you know, because it seems like once you start to struggle in that part of it, it's like your cultural identity and your traditions and everything just fall away, you know, and all you could focus on is that drug or that alcohol. And I think that's a huge part of it for our Indigenous people, is to reintroduce that or help them reintroduce culture and tradition back into their lives so they can, you know, start to live a better life.
Yeah, if you don't know who you are, where you come from, then you're just kind of wandering, still searching. Where do I belong? Where do I fit in? Especially, you know, urban Indigenous people, we see like the gang life, or, you know, things that don't particularly pertain to us because someone didn't teach us. And once we get rooted in our culture or kind of know where we come from, it sets a foundation, I think.
Molly, can you tell everyone what things looked like before you got sober?
Chaos, chaotic. I struggled with narcotics, crack cocaine and opiates, and I was strung out on that for a long while. And it took me a long time to say I was an alcoholic, because my perception of an alcoholic was somebody passed out on the ground, pissed and throw up all over them, or just binge drinking day and night. And I didn't do those things. But when I read the book, I'm like, that is me. Ah, I was so like disgusted with it. And it was always a drink that took me back out, right? I would get these stints of clean time. I don't want to do this. I'd have a baby, breastfeed, and then I'd be clean. But it was always a drink that took me back out onto that run. When I really thought about it, took me back to the drinking and the drugging. And it was just an insane cycle. I didn't know how to stop. It took me to prison. That's what it had to take. It had to take me to be confined and it taken away from everything. I wasn't the type to get in trouble. Like, I was the good one in my family. I had held jobs in the community, was a college student. I was basically the mother of my family to my siblings. And I've never wanted to be like my mom, right? I never wanted to be like my mom and my dad. But yeah, I was just like my mom and my dad. And it took me going to prison and then coming back home, starting over. And holidays is what set it off again. And it was back in that insane run, right? Take a drink because I knew I couldn't do drugs. But it would always go back to that again. And I lost my life. I died. A friend and I were partying with some of the people, and we were swimming in the ditches that I've always swam in with my kids. And he died. I drowned. It's a whole experience that happened with that, but I was sent back. I was sent back, and that's a whole different story. So, how I came back and I was able to save my friend, jump back into the water, and bring him back to life because he was dead. And that experience really changed my life. Then I knew I had another chance. I feel like I had a conversation with people or something. The experience I experienced being unconscious, dead, in between worlds, whatever you want to call it changed me. I say hell is not hot. Hell is pitch black and freezing cold. I think that's why they say it burns, because it's so cold. And then coming back from that, the hell, I would say it's hell and heaven, right? In between worlds. And I should be dead. My hair was caught up in the ditch where the water passes through. My hair was caught up in the rebar and I couldn't get up. I could see the top of the water. And I remember throughout my life, I always had this dream or seen this image from a little girl, myself. I could see myself aerial vision in this big mass of water, like an ocean. Or sometimes I would see myself from underneath in the ocean. I'm a little tiny person in the water. And I told myself, Molly, this is how you die. Like, this happened already. Let's just take it, right? Take it. I remember screaming out, like, forgive me, because I should have been with my children that day. And instead, I chose partying and drinking and drugging. And that happened. They said my friend was dead and I revived him back. He was in a coma for a long while. And I knew then the next day when I woke up, everything was so much more vivid. Everything was so much more brighter, louder, colorful. I had another chance and I made the decision to go get help. I never been to rehab. I had a shirt that said rehab is for quitters at one time.
Yeah.
I I just wanted to learn to stop using drugs and alcohol, and I was already on federal probation. And I had to make the decision with my two older kids. My daughter at the time was using, drinking, drugging, selling drugs. My son was in a group home, and he had took off and he came home to see me. So it was just all bad. It was just like back into a corner when I came home from prison again after the relapse. It just got worse. And so I had to leave where I was at. And I got to a rehab facility and I stayed there and I ended up learning about why and what happened, right? What happened to Molly? Why did she start masking and covering up with a substance? Learning the forgiveness on that path, step work, tons of criminal mind work. I'm truly, truly grateful for the center that I went to. And it was an enclosed, I couldn't leave program. And at that time, it was like 6 months you could stay there and then you go to the transitional. But just as I was leaving just about to graduate, finished the program, I was arrested again. And this time I was facing an attempted murder case. And I'm like, wait, I didn't do it. You know, I didn't do it. We say that, you know, people, a lot of people say, I didn't do it. I'm not guilty. I had to go back to prison again and fight this case, an attempted murder case. And as an Indigenous woman in the federal system, already on probation, you know, that doesn't look so great. But I had a psychic change.
Man, your share is just so amazing. I could like sit here and listen to you talk. It's just so amazing. Thank you so much, man.
Beyond your wildest dream, right? Recovery, we're living today, Ralph. We're not no longer just existing, we're living.
I'm so grateful that Janae referred you and I got you on finally. Well,
Yes.
thank you so much for courageously sharing your story. What a powerful share. Thank you so much.
Masapo, we say in our language. There's no word for thank you, but masapo.
Any other thing that you want to share before we end this?
I like to say to everybody, just be good to yourself. Be good to yourself and drink lots of water.
All right, Molly, thank you so much.
Yes.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person who is walking with us on this healing journey. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.